Coming to you virtually from Cal State University, San Bernardino, this is the College of Arts and Letters podcast. I'm Kelly Kluke. My guest for this episode is Dr. Stacy Fraser, Music Department Chair, Professor, and Director of Opera at CSUSB. Stacy talks about all sorts of things, including her short film now streaming on Amazon, which the soprano produced and performs in, Still Life After Death. You'll also hear how her short film ties in with the Grammys. Let's get started. So where did you grow up and what was that like?
I grew up on the east coast of Canada in a province by the name of Nova Scotia. And it's beautiful there. It still is beautiful there, although I haven't been lately for very good reasons. So I grew up there and studied music from the time I was a little kid, and was privileged to have piano lessons from the time I was seven. So I'm thankful to my parents. They were able to provide that for me and for my brother. Growing up there, I mean, it still is getting to be a little bit more multicultural, but for the most part, it was pretty homogenous culture. Mostly, I guess biggest population would be white, and the second largest would be black, and some indigenous, although the indigenous people didn't, still a lot of segregation exists. They live on the reservation, and it was also, you know, there wasn't, there were only a couple of Asian kids in my class. It was, like I said, not very multicultural at the time, but things are changing. It's getting much better. And I went off to the University of Toronto, where that really opened up my eyes to the fact that there are a lot of different types of people in the world. I lived in residence there at the University of Toronto, right on Spadina Avenue, and took the Spadina bus down Spadina Avenue through Chinatown and the famous Kensington Market. And it was at that point where I realized, wow, there are a lot of other things in this world, a lot of other types of food to eat, a lot of different types of music to listen to. It was a very eye-opening experience for me. So that was the first part. Yeah.
And then your background was singing. You started playing the piano first, but your background was singing. And then how did you come to love opera as much as you do?
Well, as a kid, so yeah, my brother and I both had piano lessons from the time we were pretty little. But my mother listened to the live Met broadcasts every Saturday afternoon. So I grew up listening to it. She studied music when she was young, but at that time, and it was the early 70s, and so she got married and had her kids and became more of a music lover than a practicing musician. But we certainly heard the opera our whole time growing up. And to tell you the truth, my first love was Broadway. I wanted to be on Broadway. I wanted to be a musical theater person. But I didn't dance. And in my community at the time, there wasn't any place to take dance lessons. Yeah. So again, that's changed, thank goodness. It's become definitely more cosmopolitan. But in my small hometown, New Glasgow, there wasn't the opportunity to study dance. So it was music and acting. And when you put those two together, and you pretty much have opera. But when I got to the University of Toronto, they had to sort of beat the musical theater out of me. I used to sneak down into the bottom of the basement practice rooms and sing with my music theater friend pieces that none of the faculty could hear us sing. Because we were only supposed to be studying classical music.
Okay, so from that time to now that you're at CSUSB, how did you come to be here and what were the steps that you took?
Sure. Okay, so after my undergraduate degree, I did some young artist programs. One was the Tanglewood on the East Coast, which is a pretty big deal as a young artist to be accepted to that program. It's home of the Boston Symphony in the summertime. And then I was accepted at Manhattan School of Music for a Master of Music degree in performance. And super competitive there. Everybody had a great voice. Everybody was a good actor. I had to find sort of a niche to stand out in the crowd, and I discovered that would be in contemporary classical music. Somehow, none of the singers wanted to do it except me. And so that's what gave me the most solo opportunities and led me to pursue a career, a performance career in new music. So after I finished my Master of Music degree, I took a couple of years off to get some teaching experience in the studio and to really get my vocal technique together. I was then accepted to UC San Diego to do a doctoral degree in contemporary music performance. But, you know, it's funny, I got the opera bug just as I was starting my doctoral degree and ended up doing a young artist program at the San Diego Opera while doing my doctoral degree at UCSD. So it was a busy time, but it was great because I was getting in La Jolla, I was getting all this exposure to new music, but in downtown San Diego, I was singing on the operatic stage. Then what happened? My visa was expiring and I wanted to stay in this country. So I knew that the only way to do that would be to take advantage of my doctoral degree and go into academia. So I took a job in the middle of nowhere at a university by the name of Northern State University in Aberdeen, South Dakota. Yeah. And it's kind of funny. So when I arrived to start my first academic job, I was 7 months pregnant. And I think the dean was a little shocked. But I wasn't entitled to any kind of maternity leave because I was just a new employee. So I did my first year and had a baby all at the same time. I took 3 days off, I think. I had the baby and then I went back to school.
Well, 3 days. It shows me now, because you juggle so much currently, that you grew up doing that. So, yeah. All right. Speaking of teaching, so you're at South Dakota, then what was the next steps to get to CSUSB?
Then this job came up. And I remember I was in the basement of our cute little house in South Dakota, and I said to my husband, I was watching Dancing with the Stars, and I saw the palm trees and these beautiful ballroom dancers and Hollywood in the background. And I turned to my husband, I said, oh my gosh, what have we done? We need to go back. And he said, oh my God, we just got here. Are you kidding? Like, no, we got to go back. And then this job came up literally, I think, the same week. So that was 2007. And here I am, still here.
That is a fantastic story. Thank you for sharing. In this current pandemic virtual time, how are you and your staff handling it? Because performance is everything for what you do. So how's it been going?
So in March, it was devastating and bewildering and tragic, I think, for everybody, no matter what the discipline. It was hard, really, really hard. And the morale in our department was pretty low. And but we've had so much support from the dean and from ATI and from James Trotter and from our staff technician, Kashi Harina, that we now are in a pretty good place. We have the equipment we need to get us through. I mean, it's not the same as meeting face-to-face with our students. It never will be, because making music in real time is what we do. And that can't be substituted by a virtual choir. Virtual choirs, believe it or not, take tons and tons and tons of editing and hours and hours and hours of putting all of that together. So it's not, we can't sustain it forever, but we're artists. We're not going to be stopped. We're going to stay creative and we're going to find ways to spread joy and inspiration, especially in a time where we all need it.
So this is so exciting. You performed and produced the short film Still Life After Death, and it's now streaming on Amazon. Please tell us all about that.
Well, back in my doctoral days, one of my professors was Chinnery Ung. Chinnery Ung, actually, he's being inducted into the Academy of Arts and Letters this upcoming June, May, June, I think. He's a well-regarded composer. He was born in Cambodia, and was able to leave during the Khmer Rouge and came to the United States and studied actually at Manhattan School of Music and then went on to do his doctoral degree in composition at Columbia. So he was a mentor to me. And when I mentioned earlier that I hadn't really been exposed to any kind of multiculturalism growing up, he really, again, showed us that there was a whole other, that there is music beyond the Western tradition. So in his seminar, he was introducing music that embraced Asian traditional music, but with a Western foundation in the area of, theory and how the music's actually put together. And I became really attracted to the music more from perhaps kind of a touristy kind of point of view. I didn't understand anything about it. I just liked the sounds. So he encouraged me, you know, it's not enough to just be attracted to the sounds. You have to know the tradition behind this specific kind of music. So he's invited me to different festivals over the years. I mean, he's now a mentor. He was a professor, but he's still a mentor to me. And we were in Thailand, in Bangkok, touring. And I was sitting beside him on the bus. And I said, Chinnery, I want to sing Still Life After Death. This was in 2008. And he said, you have to be careful because the piece isn't demanding just from a musical point of view, but it's also very demanding from an emotional and intellectual point of view. And you have to be ready to study it. So to me, that meant I shouldn't do it yet. But in 2016, I got funding. I was funded with a summer research grant and a mini grant. And from CSUSB, and I went back to him and I said, it's time. I want to do it now. But I said, I don't want to just sing it in performance. I want to stage it like an opera and I want to make a movie out of it. And he said, okay, go for it. So I thought, who's going to be crazy enough to do this with me? So I have a tenor friend, Timur Bekbozanov, fine singer in his own right. He's also a producer. And I said, will you direct this? He said, yeah, sure. And I said, well, what about your partner, Sandra? Will she shoot it? Will she be the film director for it? And she said, yes. So all of a sudden I have Timur and then Sandra, who's with, at the time she was with Nickelodeon, now she's with Disney. And we decided to make a staged adaptation of the piece. Jason Mann is the lighting designer on the work, and Lee Perez is the costume designer. He does a lot of film and TV, of course, in LA. And we did the theatrical presentation on our stage in the recital hall at CSUSB, and then on location shots in Malibu. It also features two other artists, James Hayden, baritone, who is very popular in the LA area, does a lot of, work with LA Master Chorale, studio work, et cetera. And then my own daughter, Twyla, is in the piece. So that's how it all happened. But, you know, to actually get accepted for streaming takes a long time. I had to jump through a lot of hoops for Amazon to finally be, you know, ready to stream. You get one part done and then it's sent to the next office. Oh, your captions are not correct. And then they send it back and you have to start all over again. So finally this summer, I think my daughter was Googling to see what was going on with the movie. And she said, oh, mommy, it's here. It's on Amazon Prime. I said, oh, come on, it isn't. She said, yes, it is. It's right here.
They didn't tell you that's how you found out? So random.
I know.
It's wonderful. Congratulations. And finally, on a personal level, how are you and your family doing?
Oh, we're fine. Thank you. Okay. We're fine. My daughter keeps super creative and busy. She's busier than ever. She is doing some things outside of the house, but it's, you know, some dance lessons, and she has a performance group that she's working with, Unity Dance Theater. They just did a show over the weekend, but it was all very COVID safe. So she is getting some interaction with other kids, which I think is great. And then I'm actually, my opera class is hybrid. So we're having a really good time. There are some photos we took the other day of the kids recording the soundtrack, because we're doing a soundtrack and a movie, you know, similar to Still Life After Death, actually. and they're masked up and separated so that nobody's sound is leaking into anybody else or anybody's aerosols or leaking into anybody else's space. So, but it's great to see them every week. It's keeping me sane, I think, the opportunity to see my students in person.
Yeah, one of our Coyote Radio students, Tyler Veazey, I believe, is involved with that. He's our production director here, and so he's really thrilled to be on campus. Yeah, so.
Well, thanks for your interest, Kelly. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
It's great timing because this piece was just, this piece is on an album that has been submitted for Grammy, and we're waiting right now. Like, I don't know when they're going to make the announcement, maybe 3 more weeks. So this Still Life After Death is on an album called Voices of the Pearl, Volume 3, produced by soprano Anne Harley, this piece and another piece of Chinnery Ung's. So we're really, we'll see what happens. It's competitive.
Still Life After Death is one of the feature pieces on the 2020 album Voices of the Pearl, Volume 3. The album was submitted for a Grammy nomination. It features some of the top new music artists in Southern California, including Brightwork New Music and Canadian soprano and producer of the album, Anne Harley. Now, here is Stacy's song, Still Life After Death.
Arahat
Our thanks to Dr. Stacey Fraser, Music Department Chair, Professor, and Director of Opera Theater at Cal State San Bernardino. Please search for her short film on Amazon, Still Life After Death. This has been the CSUSB College of Arts and Letters podcast, which features our faculty, staff, and students. I'm Kelly Kluke. Hope you enjoyed this episode and be looking for our next one on iTunes, Spotify, and Buzzsprout.